I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Professor Walter Longo, is internationally recognized as a leader in the field of aging studies and related diseases. His discoveries include some of the major genetic pathways that regulate aging and life-threatening diseases, and the identification of a genetic mutation that protects men from several common diseases. He is a professor of gerontology and biological sciences and director of the Longevity Institute at the School of Gerontology at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, one of the leading centers devoted to teaching and research on aging. He is also director of the Oncology Laboratory and Longevity at the Institute of Molecular Oncology, IFOM, Milan, Italy. Professor Longo received the National Shock Lecture Award from the National Institute of Aging in 2010, and in 2013, the Vincent Cristofalo Rising Star Award in Research on Aging, and the 2016 Glenn Award for Research in the Biology of Aging. In 2015, after a number of his papers were among the most widely cited in the biometric field, Time magazine called him a guru of longevity. Dr. Longo received a PhD from North Texas in 1992 and another one from UCLA in 1997 and completed postdoctoral training in 2000. He has carried out research in the areas of fasting and longevity, cell biology and genetics, the regulation of aging and multiple stress-resistant systems in yeast and mammals, cancer, diabetes, and Alzheimer's. He has over 70 peer-reviewed articles, 4 book chapters, multiple research grants, is active in research review, and student research advisor. He is author of the bestseller, The Longevity Diet, Discover the New Science Behind Stem Cell Activation and Regeneration to Slow Aging, Fight Disease, and Optimum Weight. More information is available at http://gero.usc.edu/cv2013/cv-longo-v2012.pdf. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Longo, and I look forward to hearing about nutrition, longevity, and disease. What is the composition of everyday nutrition to live longer and healthier?
Well, if you look around the world, and whether it's Okinawa, Loma Linda, California, Sardinia, Italy, or some of the areas in Greece and Costa Rica, they tend to have a mostly vegan diet with some fish, a little bit of meat, a little bit of milk products. Lots of times this is from goat and sheep. And so this is it's a common denominator that you see among these populations. And also, for example, largely because they have so much vegetables and legumes, and not so much meat, the protein intake is generally very low. It's sufficient, but very low, meaning it's around 0.7 or so grams per kilogram of body weight per day, or 0.31 grams per pound of body weight per day. And and also they're high nourishment. They eat well, and people that populations that live long tend to maybe have the same components over and over. For example, the Okinawans used to have these purple sweet potatoes, And these used to constitute a large portion of what they of the calories consumed every day, because you know that's all they could get.
Mm-hmm.
So very similar behavior in Sardinia or Calabria, Italy, where very long, particularly men, live. And so the suspicion is that the nourishment and also not necessarily you know, having lots of exotic foods,
mm-hmm.
that's probably a good thing. You know, people always think of all these new foods or new fashions are important, but that's not what you see when you look at these people. They usually used to grow the food in their backyard or you know, in nearby, buy it nearby, and that's all they consumed.
And were the studies that you made of people around the world that live longer the basis for your diet?
Yes, absolutely. But the diet is trying to go, you know, several steps further,
mm-hmm.
Meaning that the centenarians is only what I call one pillar, one of the five pillars. And the other ones are epidemiological studies, so studies of large populations,
mm-hmm.
Clinical studies, basic research, focus on longevity. So, you know, what about a mouse? How do you make a mouse live mm-hmm. longer, healthier?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last pillar is studies of complex systems, like cars and planes, believe it or not. So it was important to match the centenarian diet with everything else to come up with the longevity diet that I mm-hmm. describe in my book.
Mm-hmm. And is it similar to the Mediterranean?
It has lots of components, of course, of the Mediterranean. I don't know that it's you know, that similar, meaning mm-hmm. that, for example, I recommend low fruit starches, I recommend low levels of starches,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, pasta, bread, etc., less meat than the Mediterranean diet, and mm-hmm. So basically, I exclude all kinds of meats besides certain types of fish. That's the only allowance for meat that I have in the book. Yeah, so it's quite different,
mm-hmm.
But it does have you know, of course, it's got nothing to do with the Mediterranean because, as I just mentioned, it's Okinawa and Costa Rica and et cetera. So. But, of course, the Mediterranean diet's got a lot of good components, which happen to be components of many of the healthy diets around the world.
Many of them do. Now, what you describe is very similar to what I eat, because, as I said, I'm vegan. Now, I do go off one meal a week, and I usually, at that meal, will have either a piece of fish or eggs and cheese. I miss cheese a lot. That's basically how I go off, although at Christmas time, my sister had a pork roast, and I ate a piece of pork. But I haven't had beef in probably 45, 46 years, and I doubt my stomach could handle that now.
Yeah. So it's a very sounds like a very similar diet to mm-hmm. that.
And I rarely have pasta. I may have pasta once every 3 months. I may have a couple slices of bread when I have the eggs. But that may be once a month, so
yeah.
I don't.
Now, on that side, I'm a little bit in between, meaning that
mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
describe having maybe up to 70, 80, even 100 grams of starches every day, pasta, bread, rice.
Oh.
And the reason for that is that lots of people that go on diets that are very restrictive,
mm-hmm.
they abandon them within a couple of years.
Oh.
That's just a fact, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that that's important. There is really very little data suggesting that having, you know, up to 100 mm-hmm. grams of the starches, so maybe around 300 calories per day, is about 10%, 15% of your total calorie coming from starches.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not a bad thing, I saw no evidence against it, and
mm-hmm.
that's why I felt because of the compliance, you know, I'm from Italy, and if you even try to tell an Italian, but not just an Italian, I would say
mm-hmm.
the same thing is going to be true for a Chinese
mm-hmm.
or an American, that if you say all of a sudden go on a zero starch diet, lots of people
mm-hmm.
are not going to make it for more than 6 months. Yeah.
Right, right. Now, do you advocate supplement, or will this diet handle everything that one needs?
No, I talk about a compromise in the book, and so I talk about a multivitamin and maybe an omega-3 supplement once every 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is eat well, but I understand when you look around for people, even the people that are specialized in this, and then you ask them, what did you eat in the last week? You realize that, you know, they're going to be deficient. And when people have tested, people in the United States, most people have some deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I felt that having, let's say, a multivitamin and an omega-3 supplement twice a week,
mm-hmm.
that couldn't possibly hurt you, and it's likely to help you.
It's interesting because so many of the alternative sort of doctors, they're paying a lot of attention to nutrition, and they're moving more and more to a meatless diet, like Dr. Eschelstein in cardiology. He goes for vegan. I interviewed Dale Bredesen, who has researched Alzheimer's. Nutrition is a big part of his treatment. Terry Walls, who had multiple sclerosis and who couldn't get out of bed and then healed herself, and the paleo diet was a part of hers. So more and more, it looks like the doctors, some of them, are moving away from the heavy meat and potato diet and a lot of the processed foods and all that are the standard American diet, which is good to see.
Yes, absolutely. And unfortunately now some people are moving back to the high meat diet.
Oh, are they?
With some of these low-carb diets, and that's unfortunate because the data indicates that the low-carb diet, it's going to reduce lifespan and health in most people.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to not being sustainable for very long, you know, most people eventually will want to go back to the carbs,
and
they abandon and they regain the weight and they regain the problems.
Right, right. And then, Dr. Longo, how many meals a day should someone eat, and what is the ideal feeding period or number of hours in which we eat and fast?
Yeah, so most people are aware of these 5 meals a day, 6 meals a day rules. And in the book, I talk about the fact that this has probably had a considerable influence on the epidemic of overweight and obesity that we have in the United States, and now it's over 70%. So I talk about for people that are overweight or obese or that tend to gain weight, two meals a day plus a small, let's say, 100-calorie snack is the ideal thing, the ideal regimen. And but if you don't have a weight problem or are underweight, then, of course, the 3 meals plus a snack and maybe even 5 meals, that's perfectly fine to maintain a normal weight. And the other thing is I think misconceptionism on the length, you know, what's called time-restricted feeding. And so you're hearing lots of people now going on this very long fast that lasts 16 hours or more per day.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book I explained that that's not a good idea. I mean, eating for about 12 hours and fasting for about 12 hours, that's excellent. So that type of time-restricted feeding, as Sachin Panda and others have shown, is excellent. It's going to improve metabolic health, improve sleep, and there's really nothing negative associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
As you go past that, then you start to see, for example, the increase in gallstone formation and the need for a gallbladder operation. You start seeing in the people that skip breakfast increased mortality overall, increased cardiovascular mortality, increased cancer mortality. So basically, for people that lots of people that have been fasting for 16 hours or more per day, they seem to be doing worse than everybody else. Now, doesn't mean that somebody can lose a lot of weight and do very well by fasting for 16 hours a day. The idea is that overall, if you look at everybody doing this kind of, having this kind of behavior, that you don't, not only you don't see positive results, you see negative results. And for those reasons, I think it's good to stick with the 12 hours, say 13 hours at the most of fasting per day.
It's interesting that you talk about the two meals with the light one, because that's where I am right now, because my thyroid test is at just above 7. And so my thyroid is so slow, and my primary doctor wants to put me on thyroid medication, but the endocrinologist wants to wait until it gets to 8, which means that I don't lose a bit of weight. It doesn't matter what I do. I mean, I walk every day. I told you I'm vegan. I don't eat that much, but I eat a lot of raw fruit and vegetables. And as I told you, very little pasta or bread, or I never eat ice cream. I don't eat cakes, pie, candy, any of that. But I don't lose any weight either. And so what I've done just to maintain is fairly good-sized breakfast and a good-sized dinner at night, and then just a very little bit at lunchtime. And that seems to work. And I did want to ask you about raw versus cooked. Is that a concern in your diet or not?
Yeah, but by the way, I should say that I've been doing that for the past 20 years, you know, skipping lunch whenever I'm going above, let's say, BMI 23. But the raw versus cooked, I think there's good and bad of both. Of course, the raw is excellent because of all the vitamins, and they may be affected by the cooking process, and also they may be washed away by the water during the cooking. On the other hand, the cooking, of course, kills a lot of these infectious agents, so it's got advantages on that side. So It's a matter of navigating these two and deciding what's best for someone, meaning that if you have a very high nourishment diet, then and lots of variety in the diet, then cooking it is probably okay, because you know, most of the cooking process don't destroy everything. So they may reduce the activity or the levels of certain vitamins by 50%, 60%, 70%, but they're almost never completely wipe it out. So then if somebody has a very high nourishment diet, cooking is probably the best way to go. Not always, but with lots of the things that they may be more prone to infectious diseases or infectious agents. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with raw. It's just that that is that danger, which is probably not a huge danger most of the time, but you know, you only need it maybe three or four times in a lifetime to put your life at risk, you know.
Right. Well, I think it's more common now than it was 30 years ago, you know, the infections resulting from the raw food.
Yeah.
Now, when I had lung cancer in 1974, the doctor put me on the vegan diet, and it was 75% raw. But the rationale, I needed the pancreatic enzymes free to deal with the supplements I was taking, and that meat and things like that use so much of the pancreatic enzymes in digesting. And so it had to do with the medical regime I was on. That was the rationale for the raw, but I still try to eat a salad at least once a day. I tried juicing, but I didn't like getting rid of all of the fiber, and so I've gone back to the salads instead.
Yeah.
Then the other big thing, exercise, and I was shocked when I read the statistics on nutrition versus exercise and cancer. The statistics are that if you exercise 5 days a week for 30 minutes, you reduce your risk of cancer by 50%, and adequate nutrition is only 35%. That was a shock to me, and I never realized that exercise was so important for cancer. I knew it was for diabetes, obesity, and all those other things. So what is your optimum exercise regime?
It's about what you just said. So in the book, I have a chapter on that, and I talk about 150 minutes a week being ideal. And when they looked at 300 minutes a week, the mortality overall, survival was not that much different. It was a little bit better, but not that much different. So 150, so that means 30 minutes five times a week. And that sounds about right. Now, keep in mind that the one particular finding with cancer, this is what I discuss in the book, that's one pillar. You really have to look at, when you look at epidemiology, you get very different results based on the study. So usually it's good to look at meta-analysis. And my suspicion is that the effect of exercise on cancer is going to be much smaller than that once you look at, 20 studies. But I think it is important that some studies are showing this very big effect, because it tells you that at minimum there's probably going to be a small effect and on cancer, but there's going to be an effect of exercise on many different things, which in the end can result in people living longer, healthier.
Great. What is a fasting mimicking diet, and why did you come up with this?
Yeah, so if you look at, I started with work on genetics, the genetics of aging, and thanks first in humans and mice with one of the gurus of longevity at the time, his name was Roy Walford. But then when I was in Walford lab, I realized that we weren't progressing very much by studying mice and humans back in the early 90s. So I switched back to simple organisms, focused on the genetics of aging. We were able to show that people that have mice and people, we and others, were able to show that mice and people that have certain genetic mutation, they live longer. But more importantly, they're very much protected from diseases, right? For example, we follow this population in Ecuador that rarely gets any cancer, any diabetes, and now we're looking at cardiovascular disease. And so that was one side. And the other side is calorie restriction. So if you take people, or at least monkeys, and you make them eat about 25% less than normal every day, at least in one study compared to the sort of standard Western diet. If you have a Western diet that is reduced 25% in calories, these monkeys live longer. But more importantly, the diabetes is completely prevented in these monkeys, and cancer and cardiovascular disease are cut by 50%. So, why this whole long story to get to fasting? Well, it turns out that even though first of all, genetics, there is nothing you can do. You have what you have, and now eventually we might be able to come up with drugs, but we don't have it now. So calorie restriction at the time when I started was the best way to go, restrict calories. But those were the original studies. And it turns out that if you look carefully, this chronic restriction of calorie does as much good as it does damage. So it can wipe out diabetes, or certainly reduce it to extremely low levels and have all these effects on all kinds of diseases. But then the monkeys don't live that much longer. So clearly there are trade-offs, right? So you gain something, you lose something. So then I started thinking, first of all, having the knowledge of the genes, we started thinking, what controls these genes? And so that's what some of the identification that we made. Proteins control TOR and IGF-1, and sugars control PKA. So we started putting the connections between nutrients and genes. We started putting this story together, and that's And then looking at the calorie restriction success and failure, basically we said, well, what if you could just do a fasting periodically, once in a while? And what if that periodic, the shock that the system gets or that change that the system gets is long-lasting, right? So then the idea was maybe we can eliminate all the problems of calorie restriction or chronic calorie restriction and maintain the benefits. That's where this periodic fasting comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And we started first saying, what if you take a mouse, a middle age, and then you start fasting it for 4 days, twice a month, just 4 days. And we showed that they live longer, the cancers were cut by almost 50%, their cognitively, their brain was working better, their memory was better, their inflammations were reduced, et cetera, et cetera. And then eventually we developed a fasting mimicking diet, meaning that because we knew which ingredients control which genes, we started playing with the levels of nutrients. And so now if you do, like, say, a low-protein, low-sugar, high-fat diet, mm-hmm. now I'm just, oversimplifying it, but that's the idea behind controlling these genes by controlling the content of the diet. So you could do periodic fasting, but on top of it, you don't even do fasting. You mm-hmm. eat. But the body, in a very natural way, by the way, because it's a vegan, it's 5 days of a vegan diet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in a very natural way, the body understands that the message is go into a full starvation mode, and that's where you start seeing all kinds of benefits.
So with yours, you would give up the fish and you would give up some of the pasta or not? I'm not exactly sure. You'd have to give up the fish.
For the FMD, you give up everything pretty much. That you normally eat because this diet is something that, you know, took us years and years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention, I don't make a penny out of it. But we felt that for this to become standardized and become, you know, really an option to drugs,
mm-hmm.
to extremely expensive drugs, it was necessary to standardize it, clinically test it, and have everything always identical in every package. And so that's what we tested clinically here at USC, and then eventually that's what I think over 50,000 people now have done at home with either the help of the doctor or the help of a registered dietitian.
And so the long-term outcome then of this mimicking diet would be increased longevity and a lower rate of illnesses?
Well, we know that for mice. For people, we did a three-cycle clinical trial so that people did this five-day fasting-mimicking diet called Prolon. They did it once a month for 3 months, and so we measure their cholesterol, et cetera, before they started and mm-hmm. after 3 cycles, and then 3 months after the 3 cycles ended. And so what we showed for people that were at risk to begin with, we saw lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, lower triglycerides, lower fasting glucose, lower systemic inflammation, CRP, which is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and also lower IGF-1, which is a suspected risk factor for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the 3 cycles of the diet had tremendous effects. And then when we looked 3 months after the end of the diet, about 60% of the changes were still there, suggesting that eventually the effect of these short fasting periods or fasting-mimicking diet periods, they go away, but they last a long time.
Mm-hmm. So they deal with the precursors for disease, right?
I think they deal more than with the precursors for disease, or in addition to the precursor for disease, or at least I say the foundation of that,
mm-hmm.
is they deal with the damage in cells and tissues, right? So by forcing a rejuvenation inside of the cell mm-hmm. and at the organ level, they fix everything. So most people that are 20 years old, they don't have high cholesterol, they don't have blood mm-hmm. pressure, high blood pressure, they don't have high fasting glucose. et cetera, right? They don't have high CRP. So why? Well, why doesn't a 20 this person has been around for 20 years? Why wouldn't they have some of these problems? You know, rarely they do. Why? Because their tissues and cells are still functioning very well. They're still young enough to not, lead to these misregulations or dysregulation that then leads to high cholesterol, high blood pressure, etc. So that's what we think is the foundation of this. It's just regeneration, rejuvenation, both stem cell dependent and stem cell independent.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying it does have an effect on diseases as well as prevention, both. Yeah.
Well, in mice we demonstrated to have a very powerful effect in disease prevention, but also in disease treatment. So, for example, we use it to treat type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, multiple sclerosis. All these are all in disease model, and we use to treat many different cancers. It's because it's rejuvenating, regenerating, it has the potential to be able to affect many different diseases, both at the prevention level but also at the treatment mm-hmm. level.
And say for cancer, for example, then you would still need something that would kill the cancer cells, but this would be a supportive intervention?
Yeah, well, yes and no, because it can. We in many, many different mouse models, and now we have lots of clinical trials ongoing. But certainly in the mice, we could show that it usually works as well as chemo, right? So if you give a mouse a round of chemo, or mm-hmm. you give it a round mm-hmm. of fasting mimicking diet, the effect is about the same. The trick is when you combine the two, all of a sudden you can start seeing either a much more powerful effect, or even cancer-free survival, which we almost never see in the mice mm-hmm. with the cancers we inject. You know, rarely mm-hmm. you see the mice that, especially if it's a metastatic model, the cancer goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. You rarely see the cancer go away. But when we combine the fasting mimicking diet and the chemotherapy, now we're starting to see these effects.
Mm. Yeah, and with chemo, so often it comes back after a few years. And so with the...
Yeah, exactly, right? So we suspect that the resistance acquisition is either prevented or reversed by the fasting, mm-hmm. So that the cancer cell can become resistant to the chemo, but cannot. It's hard for the cancer to become resistant to both the chemo and the fasting.
Mm-hmm. And you said something about stem cells. Are they involved somehow in this process?
Yes, they're very much involved in the process in the sense that stem cells can promote, if you're asking about cancer, mm-hmm. they can promote the rejuvenation of the and the function of the immune system. And the immune system remains the number one protection against cancer. And this is why immunotherapies are now considered to be mm-hmm. the promise for cancer treatment. Yeah. So then stem cells can have a big role, but we think it's a dual role. On one side, you stimulate the stem cells and maybe rejuvenate the immune system, and on the other side, you hurt the cancer cells directly by chemotherapy and the fasting mimicking diet.
Mm-hmm. Good. That sounds like a good public health principle.
I think so. I think that, you know, for too long we've been focusing on drugs that mm-hmm. have very specific effects, and the problem in cancer is very obvious, right? You treat somebody and they can respond extremely well, and 2 months later that drug is pointless,
mm-hmm.
Or 6 months later. And this is not just chemotherapy; it's also hormone therapy, it's immunotherapy. All therapies, you still see this behavior. For example, immunotherapy may be effective against 20% of the patients that take it, but the other 80% don't respond, right? So That's been really a big failure, I think, in always trying to have this perfect magic bullet, when the reality is that the cancer, as well as many other diseases, not just the cancer, let's say autoimmune disorders, you see the same problem. You try to have this magic bullet to kill the bad players, but the bad players can adapt, and they can modify, and they can eventually become resistant, and then you're in trouble.
Well, I was thinking, too, of the two-prong approach. You're killing the cancer cells, but you're also making the environment less favorable for the survival of cancer. So you're using a double two-prong approach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So you have a wide, fasting represents a very wide net, right? So you're throwing a wide net. And, of course, it's not a super strong wide net, but it's very strong. And it just, in many cases, it needs the extra help of that bullet, you know. So that bullet that does the killing, it's like, you know, if you think about somebody that was shot and at the same time was not given any food for a while, right? You can see how the this double combination would hurt him more than the bullet alone. You
know? Right. Yep. Great. Good. I'm glad I hear you talking about epidemiology, too, so I figured you must have a public health background. So that's great. Then, as far as longevity, is this also possible with humans, or is this still at the mouse stage, or did I miss something?
No. I mean, as I mentioned, we've done a clinical trial now. The one we published last year at USC had 100 patients in it. Then we did another one with 60 patients in collaboration with Charité on multiple sclerosis. We've tested over a couple hundred patients in either ourselves or our colleagues with cancer and the fasting mimicking diet or fasting. And about 50,000 people, followed by thousands of doctors, have now done the prolonged fasting mimicking diet on their own. And the incredible news is after these 50,000 people, we've had very, very few reports about you know, serious side effects. I think there was somebody that had to, they went to the hospital, but then was released with no problems. But this is really, really good news to see such a low level of side effects on so many people. At the same time, I always like to remind people that fasting mimicking diets are should be on a need-to-do-it basis. So people shouldn't just say, oh, you know, I'm just going to do 10 a year because I think it's going to make me younger. Not yet, you know. Now it's better to say, look, if I'm very healthy, I do it once or twice a year. That's okay. I mean, you know, it's a 800 to 1,100 calorie diet. We try to make it restrictive, but not excessively restrictive. And then, you know, somebody has high cholesterol, then, of course, you know, you might have to do it three or four times a year. And now if somebody is obese, has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, yes, that person is at such a high risk for other problems that doing it once a month, at least until they move back to a better state, it's a risk worth taking, especially now in view of these 50,000 people and the lack of reported severe side effects.
And what are you working on currently in your research?
Too many things. So ranging from we're starting a clinical trial on Alzheimer's in Italy. We're starting a clinical trial on diabetes in Holland. We're starting three trials here at USC on metabolic syndrome and diabetes, Crohn's disease, colitis. This is just a few of the examples. Of course, we're doing lots of animal studies still, and we're trying to combine them to get a better understanding of what's going on.
Do you know Dr. Bredesen and Dr. Walls?
My second paper was published with Dale.
Oh, was it? He's a nice guy.
In 1986, Yeah. I mean, sorry, 1996, not 86.
Oh,
1996, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a paper, the first paper where I showed that starvation extends the lifespan of yeast.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Journal of Cell Biology paper, and Dale was also on that paper.
Yeah, I enjoyed my interactions with him very much. He's a bright man and very down-to-earth, very personable. So that was great.
Yeah.
Then is there anything else you'd like to say before we talk about your book and how the listeners can locate it?
No, I think, you know, I started telling people, spread the word. I mean, you know, there was something on 60 Minutes last night talking about some of the drugs that are so expensive, you know, and are making entire cities broke.
Mm-hmm.
Because these drug companies are overcharging on these drugs. And so I think we really need to start thinking about alternatives. I mean, I am not thinking as drugs. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes we see the most powerful effects with drugs, but this system is not sustainable. And so we really need to look hard when there is an alternative. We got to go with the alternative, and these fasting mimicking diets, I think, are going to be a major alternative so that we stay healthy. We don't even end up in the sick state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when we do and we do need the drug, then absolutely, then that's a time when you need the drug. You know?
It's been my experience from being a public health nurse out in the community and working with people that have cancer, and then my last book was on cancer prevention, that people are really not very interested in prevention. It's not a priority. Most people are not interested until they get sick, and then they want a pill that's going to fix it immediately. It's very discouraging to me.
Yeah, but this is why I spent, you know, 30 years now working on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really understood from early on, from the welfare years also, the importance mm-hmm. of removing the burden as much as possible and having other reason why people may want to do this. For mm-hmm. example, lots of people don't do it to prevent cancer. They simply do it to lose belly fat
mm-hmm.
And maintain muscle mass, right? So these fasting mimicking diets now are a good way to, why? Because the body, when you do the fasting mimicking diet, goes to your visceral fat first and your belly fat, and that's the energy reservoir. That's a gas tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're now seeing lots of people that may not care so much or not might think so much mm-hmm. ahead, but they don't mind that losing that 7 pounds in 5 days, right? And
mm-hmm.
So, of course, we don't want to, you know, sound like a weight loss company, and we don't push that too much. But certainly, mm-hmm. maybe we should push it more, because why not? This is making people much healthier, and if that's what we have to do to get people healthier, is to say, well, I'm much more worried about the way I look than the way I function.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the way to do it, may not be a bad way to do it then.
Right, because people are always interested in losing a little bit of weight. So, and that's always a topic that people listen to more.
Yeah, listen to, and they're also willing to put some effort into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the trick, I think, about this fasting mimicking diet. Instead of being something that clearly is going to fail, like you go to the doctor, he tells you eat less, eat more this. If the instructions come with a lot of changes, people will not do it. This is why earlier I was saying, leave the pasta there,
mm-hmm.
leave the rice there,
mm-hmm.
leave some bread, not very much, but leave it there, because that's got to be something that people enjoy, and if they can enjoy it, then they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fasting mimicking diet, I think, allows people to keep whatever it is that they do most of the time, you know, make the changes that they can make. Don't over-push them to revolutionize their diet, and then still able to get lots of the effects. Now, of course, in the book I talk about, ideally you should do both, right? You should do everyday diet,
mm-hmm.
exercise, and then the fasting-mimicking diet. But I do understand that maybe, let's say, 20, 30, 40% of people will never do that.
No. Uh-uh. So it sounds like this might then jumpstart my weight loss. Because, as I said, it's my thyroid that is so sluggish, and my doctor told me I would never lose weight with my thyroid as it is, but...
Yeah, and now is there an autoimmune component to your thyroid dysfunction?
I have no idea.
Yeah, but there may be, right? So that's why the fasting may work, mm-hmm. May help you tremendously, also by potentially affecting the thyroid function. Mm-hmm. We're now, one of the trials that we have active together with a doctor on the East Coast is Hashimoto, looking at thyroid function. Mm-hmm. And we'll see. I mean, we don't have results yet, but certainly mm-hmm. That's one of the hypotheses that the cycles of fasting could help normalize thyroid mm-hmm. function as well as lots of other functions.
Well, it's worth a try because my whole thing is I have AFib. So I have to be careful what I take so I don't screw up the heart more than it is with doing something with the thyroid. But it sounds like that the diet would not be something. I mean, I couldn't go out and start taking thyroid on my own or taking something like that. But the diet would be a safer approach to use, I believe, than most anything else I can think of at this point. Because yep. The exercise doesn't seem to do anything at the point I'm at. And the nutrition, I don't think I can do much with it because of being vegan and the limitations I have on my nutrition already. So it's worth trying. Yep, thank you. Then,
yes.
Mm-hmm, do you want to tell us then about your book and how listeners can locate it, and also if you have any products or any services?
Yeah, so the book is called The Longevity Diet. It's published by Avery Random House. It's available on Amazon, and I think it's still available at Barnes & Noble, etc. And I donate all the proceeds to my foundation, which is called Create Cures Foundation, at createcures.org, and people can also follow me at Prof. Walter Longo Facebook page. We try to keep people updated on the new research and novel findings, particularly in the field of nutrition and longevity and diseases. And then finally, the Prolon fasting mimicking diet. That's a company that I founded many years ago, and it sells the fasting mimicking diet. It's a 5-day program. I've been trying to get them to keep it as low price as possible, so they're moving in that direction without compromising the quality. And so this can be found at ProlonFMD.com. ProlonFMD. FMD, fastingmimickingdiet.com.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's been very interesting, and it's has such a broad scope as far as prevention and treatment of such a variety of diseases that I think it's fascinating work that you're doing, and so I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Well, thank you very much, and appreciated the set of questions, and I think it's now we're counting on you making it to 105. You know?
I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically, when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine, who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.